With no electricity and nothing but a flashlight, she'd accomplish little if she didn't get there before dark. If only she hadn't lost track of time. Poor Rufus. She'd left the German Shepherd alone for too long. He'd probably messed on the floor by now. Once she was done searching the house, she'd have to hike the trail back to the off-grid cabin in the dark. Before she turned off onto the driveway to the house, she glanced in the rearview mirror. Her palms immediately slicked. What was he doing on this road? Panic took hold. She couldn't afford to have a panic attack while driving, but they came on stronger and fiercer now than before. Breathe in, breathe out, focus on the road. The house, her destination before he appeared behind her, passed by on the right. She couldn't possibly stop there now, not with Clyde Everett on her tail. Mama's boyfriend. Charlie suspected he had killed her mother. Clyde and her mother had a heated argument that same day. After the funeral, he had followed Charlie, grabbed her and left bruises, stalked her. She tried to get a restraining order on Clyde, but Sheriff Silas Everett was not only Clyde's cousin, but also his alibi, and claimed he was with him during the time someone had shot and killed her mother. Nobody would believe that someone wanted to kill Charlie, too. She could only count on herself for protection, and, well, maybe a little help from Mac, who had put her up in that off-grid cabin while she worked this out. The grill on Clyde's truck grew bigger in her rearview mirror. Please, let me get home safe tonight. Let him turn down another road. And just like that, God answered her prayer. The very first time she could recall, the vehicle slowed and turned off the road into the driveway leading up to Charlie's house. Chapter 26. Thursday, 6:15 p.m., Emerald M. Ranch. Willow picked her way around the biggest sagebrush she'd ever seen. Heath had given them the long tour of the Emerald M. Ranch. He'd parked his shiny blue extended cab truck at the back of the Permatee property in the Bridger-Teton National Forest, and they'd walked from there. Now, Heath and Austin took turns throwing knives at a fence post that had taken 1,000 hits in the past. Maybe knife throwing was a required skill living in Wyoming, though she wasn't sure what use it would have since they weren't living in the Wild West anymore. Heath guffawed, and the two men suddenly looked like young boys again, just killing time. Laughing together, they made their way back to Willow. She'd stood a few yards away from the circus act.
A stay at the Emerald M will get you private cabins. 3 meals a day, canoes, kayaks, hiking and fishing, trail rides and a backcountry pack trip into the Gros Ventre Wilderness. Guests can take in views of the Teton and Wind River ranges, the Grayback River headwaters and canyon. And I can manage all this with only a handful of employees.
You've done well for yourself, Austin said.
Dad made the right decision giving this to you.
Heath stared off into the distance, where a significant barn stood next to a corral. A beautiful black horse and an Appaloosa grazed in the meadow. He scraped a hand over his jaw and around his neck.
I sold off a few acres to the west, and from that money I was able to improve the property. I would have sold all of it and shared the proceeds with you and Liam, but you wanted no part of it.
Austin shook his head.
To think, Dad could have done this. Made something of this place. I couldn't be prouder of you.
That put a huge grin on Heath's face. He He had dimples like Austin's.
It's good to see you.
Don't be such a stranger from now on, okay?
Okay.
While the brothers talked about the horse barn and stables, Willa watched them together. It had been right and good to come here. She'd love to come back and visit the region sometime when it had nothing at all to do with finding Jamie before her birth mother died. For the moment, she allowed the scenery, the evergreens on the mountain peak lifting their arms to praise their creator, the sky and mountain reflecting in the pristine lake, the beautiful horses grazing in the meadow, woodsy cabins nestled in the trees, and majestic mountain ranges in the distance, to whisk her away to another world, and almost another time. The place was beautiful and dreamy and wild. She sensed some part of that remained in Austin, no matter that he'd chosen to make his life far from Greyback. JT's voice resounded crisply in her thoughts.
Willow, we're branches on a tree. We grow in many directions, but we're always connected to our roots, whether we're aware of it or not.
As much as the brothers were different, they were the same. The Austin she knew was a professional, a former FBI agent. But here with his brother, he morphed into a man who looked like he belonged in the mountains of Wyoming. Why shouldn't he? This had been his home. And no matter how much he wanted to escape his past, this setting stayed with him. She followed the guys down to the barn, leaving the truck behind. Inside the barn, the musty smell of horses and hay met her. Austin stepped up to an old-looking brown horse in a stall and pressed his hand against the horse's muzzle.
Hey, Jinx. It's been much too long since I've seen you.
Realization slowly dawned. Austin? He was a cowboy. Her heart rate kicked up a few notches, and the barn tilted, but she put her hand against a wooden rail to steady her fluttering nerves. This guy she once thought she might have loved, who was he? As if to underscore her slow comprehension, Heath strolled up behind him and placed a tan cowboy hat on Austin's dark-haired head. He startled and stepped away from the horse, put his hand on the hat.
What? It's yours. Your saddle's back there, too.
You didn't get rid of them?
Of course not.
The two brothers shared a look. They had an understanding between them. No matter what, they were always brothers. Heath would never give up on that, and neither would Austin. Willow had to look away. Maybe she shouldn't be there. They needed time to reconcile on their own about whatever it was that had driven them apart to begin with. But she was here, so she steadied her runaway emotions while she took in the sight of the brothers. When it came to appearances, Heath was a slightly older version of Austin, and they were very much alike in other ways. On the surface, Heath appeared to put on a good show. No doubt he had his act together. But she had this uncanny sense that he had the same way of holding it all inside, keeping his secrets close. What had happened in their family to make them this way? With darkness approaching, they hiked back to the truck and got in. During the bumpy drive to the cabins, Heath and Austin talked about old times. The breeze filtered through the cracked window, bringing the heavy scent of pines, sagebrush, and horses. Heath steered up to the first cabin, situated 25 yards from the next one.
Here you go. These are the two new cabins I mentioned, in addition to the six already on the property. I haven't named them yet. I could call them the Austin and the Willow. How about that?
Willow laughed.
I'm good with that. These are closer together than the other more private cabins, in case a group of guests wants to stick close. Take a look and see what you think. I'll bring up fresh towels and sheets.
A new thought hit her, bringing along panic. What about internet? His deep laughter could mean only one thing.
Are you serious? People come out here to unplug.
Shoot. She should have stayed in Jackson. Both Austin and Heath had already climbed from the truck cab, and she slid across the seat and hopped onto the hard ground. She might need to get a pair of boots for this stay. Heath waited while Austin went ahead to the newly built, rustic-looking cabin.
You can come back to the house if you need internet. I hope that won't be too inconvenient for you.
Of course not. We won't be staying that long, but I appreciate your hospitality. I'm sure Austin does as well.
I hope you stay longer than you planned.
He hitched his cheek, revealing a half-grin and a knowing look in his blue eyes, and she averted her own before he read the truth. One she knew he already suspected. The man was no fool and had seen through them. Sure, they were there on business, but they'd had a relationship before, and now they were both pretending they'd moved on and let go. But their past together hovered over them, closing in on them, threatening to drag them down, and deep. Problem was, she wasn't sure if that was a bad thing.
I'll be right back in a few minutes with towels and sheets. The kitchen is already stocked with a few dishes and utensils, but it's BYOF, bring your own food. I can grab a few things from the big house for tonight if you need anything.
That's all right. As long as I can get a glass of water tonight, I'll be fine. We'll figure out something tomorrow. Supper was good, and meeting him was important, but she was growing anxious to get back to the whole reason she'd come to Wyoming. She wanted to call Dana and see if she'd learned anything. Still, she couldn't deny that seeing Austin in his element, getting a glimpse into his past and his life and who he really was meant more to her than she could fully comprehend at the moment. Heath marched back to his truck and drove off. He ran a big outfit here, one he'd practically built himself. She hoped Austin wasn't jealous of his success. She found him looking out a panoramic window at the dense greenery in which the cedar cabin was nestled. Funny, he hadn't taken off that cowboy hat. She kind of liked it on him. He appeared lost in thought. Had he even noticed her approach?
And you were so worried about seeing him, she said. It all worked out, Austin.
Willow didn't know what exactly had caused a rift between them to begin with. Or had she misunderstood? Was it all to do with their father? She wanted to ask him.
Whatever differences you had between you, it appears you've put them aside. I'm glad for you.
Now she was talking out of turn. If he and Heath could move on from whatever dark past haunted them, could she and Austin put their differences aside too, and perhaps capture what they'd once had together? No. She wasn't sure they could. She could too easily let the hurt and pain of losing him resurface. She definitely wouldn't risk going through that again. Somehow she had to resist the current called Austin that threatened to sweep her up in him. They had to focus on their goal. Time to put some space between them. She stepped back from the window while he remained staring out into the forest.
Where are you going? He snatched her wrist and reeled her in. Her determination went right through the window and disappeared into the woods. How could one simple touch so easily strip her of her resolve? Nowhere. Just thought I'd look around the cabin.
He pulled his attention from the window. It landed on her face, traveled down to her neck, then back up to her eyes. Her breath came in short rasps. What was he doing?
He lifted a strand of her hair and gently pushed it out of her face. His eyes dropped to her lips. Oh no. She would have taken another step back, but her feet had betrayed her. The real Austin. The man she'd wanted to know deeply, thoroughly, stared down at her now. She could see the truth in his eyes and much more that scared her.
Thank you for encouraging me to come here today, for coming with me.
The words came from some deep place in his heart. She could plainly see that. A place she'd longed to see before, but he'd hidden his true self. Why now? Why was he showing her now? Her pulse edged up.
Heath comes on strong at times, but don't worry about him.
Heath? Why would she worry about Heath? She was worried about Austin now, her reaction to him. Why were you scared to come here to begin with?
There's so much you don't know.
Then tell me. I want to know.
But she'd made that mistake before.
He'd revealed a portion of himself tonight, even if only in a look. Could she wait on him to share more when he was ready?
She heard Heath's heavy booted footsteps approaching the cabin.
Austin released her, the haunted look returning to his eyes. What had happened here?
Heath entered the cabin.
I brought towels and linens, some for each cabin, and your bags.
He set the two duffels on the floor and the sheets and towels on a chair. What about the jeep?
It's fine sitting at the main house tonight. I'll bring it up in the morning.
Heath opened a case. He pulled out a large canister.
Bear mace, just in case.
He handed a canister to each of them. Then he pulled out a handgun. With a glance at Willow, he offered the weapon grip first.
Austin tells me you know how to use one of these. A Sig Sauer, P238-380. You can use this one while you're here if there's a need. It won't kill a bear, but it's for protection in general.
Willow looked from one brother to the other.
I don't understand.
Don't get me wrong. You should be perfectly safe here. Austin explained you've had some trouble and that he's here to protect you as much as help you investigate.
Austin must have told Heath while they walked to the barn and she wasn't paying attention. She took the weapon, wishing she hadn't needed the stark reminder of potential danger.
Is it legal for me to have this?
Wyoming doesn't require a permit. If you're a law-abiding citizen, you can carry a gun even in the national forest.
That's good to know.
Willow examined the gun. My grandfather taught me. I lost my weapon in the fire. Lines creased Heath's forehead, but he didn't ask her about the fire. How much had Austin shared with him?
All right. You ready to head to your cabin, Austin?
He crossed his arms. I'll stay here for a while. I can walk over with my things.
Not a problem. You know where to find me if you need me.
Heath left them alone in the cabin.
Austin pinned her with his eyes, the intensity holding her hostage.
Are you going to be okay?
What? You mean alone in a cabin in the woods?
I can rough it like the best of them.
That earned her a laugh. You call this roughing it?
Yes. Yes, I do.
His dimpled grin beneath that cowboy hat sent tendrils of warmth curling around her heart. She was in so much trouble. Her cell rang. Surprised she got a signal, she glanced at the screen, then up at Austin with a smile. "It's Dana." Willow answered, "Hey, what have you found out?"
"I've called Caitlin. The news isn't good."
"Oh?" Willow eased into the padded maple rocking chair. "What is it?"
"She's in the hospital, taking a turn for the worse."
Willow lifted her face to Austin. "We're running out of time."
Chapter 27. Thursday, 7:22 p.m., MD Anderson Cancer Center, Houston, Texas. Caitlin Mason stared at the ceiling from her hospital bed, accustomed to this scenario more often than she would have liked. She thought about the phone call from JT's assistant, Dana. She didn't know about family connections in Wyoming. Willow must have been following a rabbit trail. A tear slipped down her cheek. She didn't bother to wipe it away, but let the ache in her heart work its way out. She'd wait until the emotions passed, though, before she called her brother-in-law, John, to let him know she was back in the hospital. She dreaded making that call. He traveled for his job as a consultant, and she didn't want to worry him. But he'd be furious with her, as it was, more hurt, really, that she hadn't called him already. She couldn't bear to see the pain in his eyes, which only added to the pain she already felt. Because of his years of experience in oil, he'd been a consultant to her when the wells first came in. He'd been the one to talk her into drilling in the first place. But the way he looked at her lately, she almost thought he had developed romantic feelings for her. She didn't feel that kind of love for him, but if he proposed, she would consider the proposition. What if Willow found Jamie? Jamie would need a father figure if she died, someone stable and loyal. Yes, Caitlin would consider his proposal if he offered her one. Maybe she should even encourage it. Either way, she wanted this misery to end soon, but not too soon. The nurses tried to keep their expressions bright, but she saw the pity in their eyes all the same. Still, Caitlin had fooled them many times and gone home from the hospital to live another few years before she became sick again. If only she didn't have that deep gut feeling that the end was drawing near for her. The way her back and neck ached. The extreme fatigue weighed her down like never before.
"Please, let me find my daughter first."
But what if she actually found her? Was she being selfish to want to see her daughter, meet her, hold her in her arms? Her daughter then would lose her mother, a mother she'd never known about. There was always the chance that Jamie had died long ago. She had always believed she had an intuitive sense about such things. Like when Cliff had died, she'd had a feeling something bad was going to happen, but she'd never had that feeling about Jamie. Instead, she had always sensed that Jamie had survived, that whoever had taken her that day had treasured her, loved her like only a mother could. She'd been told that women who took babies in this way were unable to have their own child or adopt, and the deep ache and longing twisted their perspective until, out of desperation, they stole someone else's child. Caitlin's baby was certainly not the first ever stolen. The doubts about her decision to continue searching, even after 2 decades, weighed on her. As of that moment, nothing in Scripture could help her silence the doubts. The trouble was, if she called off the search, she'd always wonder, and she couldn't live with that, But what did that matter? She wouldn't live much longer anyway. A fact that only drove her need to know. She'd live too long with this endless cycle of doubt and determination. Except she'd also had her doubts about Willow Anderson. She hadn't had the heart to pull out. Not when it seemed to give JT's granddaughter hope on the heels of his loss. Caitlin felt that loss to her diseased bones as if it were her own. Secretly, she'd harbored an infatuation for the man. He'd been a charmer. She thought maybe they could have grown closer. An easy friendship, perhaps? Or one last romantic fling before the end? She would have treasured the camaraderie. But then again, her death would only have left the man empty. Instead, she was the one left hurting with the news of his loss. She had to hang on to hope that Jamie would be found. "You're out there somewhere, Jamie. I just know it." Chapter 28. Thursday, 7:52 p.m., Bridger-Teton National Forest. This had been a very bad idea. Darkness closed in on Charlie as the sun finally sank far beyond the horizon, turning the forest almost an inky black in places where the moon didn't shine. Charlie hiked the trail off the beaten path to the off-grid cabin where she lived for now. She'd had to park Bronc up a little ways in the woods, on a Forest Service road. She didn't like to hike in the dark, and mostly avoided this scenario. She carried her bear mace and 9mm handgun, and hoped she wouldn't be required to use either of them. Half her focus remained on making her way along the nearly 2-mile trail to her cabin, the other half on Clyde. Why had he gone back to the house? Did it have something to do with the argument he'd had with Mama the day she was murdered? Did it involve Mama's last words to him? That is, if Clyde had been the murderer. Despite all her suspicions, she couldn't be positive. But who else? The forest remained unusually quiet. Her heart raced. A coyote's cacophonous yip from somewhere much too near startled her. She picked up her pace. The cabin barely came into view off the trail, nestled between the dense trees, a perfect hideout. But she still had a haul to get there. Sleeping alone in a secluded cabin in a dark forest didn't scare her. She was accustomed to living out in the sticks with Mama, though this was much more remote. If she stayed at the house, her house now, she wouldn't be able to sleep for fear he would kill her there. Her dog's bark reached her from the cabin. Was Rufus barking because he sensed her approach? Or had a nocturnal creature, a raccoon or a coyote, disturbed the peace, sending him into a frenzy? Poor Rufus. She'd always been good to make it back before dark. Fix dinner, take Rufus on a walk, then settle in for a good night's sleep. She didn't like lights on at night. She didn't want to draw unwanted attention to the cabin in case he thought to search for her in these woods. Maybe she was being paranoid, but she had every reason to be. She crept quietly down the trail, listening for a misstep in the cadence of night sounds. Though Rufus barked incessantly, the critters around the cabin had grown accustomed to him. He was now part of their world. He'd been given to her as a gift. There was no better security system than a German Shepherd guard dog. They'd grown close and she trusted him. But his vicious barks worried her. If something was outside the cabin that had disturbed him, then she'd prefer to be inside with him. Fear coiled around her. She hurried to the door and fumbled with the key in the darkness, shushing Rufus.
"Calm down, boy. I'm coming. I know, you need to go."
and likely already had.
She opened the door. Rufus shot past her and into the woods.
Rufus! Rufus!
Charlie called after him, but she couldn't follow him. The way was much too treacherous, even for a grouchy German shepherd. She called after him repeatedly, commanding, demanding, pleading. Aware that every shout was in direct defiance of her plan to keep quiet and stay hidden, 20 minutes later, Charlie slipped into her dark cabin, bolted the door, and found her way to the cot. Now what was she supposed to do? Her security system had run off.
Chapter 29. Thursday, 10:31 p.m., Emerald M. Ranch. Willow had donned a t-shirt and sweats to sleep in. On the bed in the Willow cabin, if he followed through with that suggestion, she pulled the cozy comforter up to her chin.
"She's in the hospital, taking a turn for the worse."
Dana's words resounded in her head. Would Caitlin even live long enough for them to complete their investigation? This hunt for Jamie could very well lead them nowhere, and it gnawed at the back of her mind, pricked at her heart. If she hoped to get any rest, she'd have to shake the enormous pressure to find Jamie in time, remove it all from her mind, or she'd be worthless tomorrow. She couldn't afford to waste one day. She hadn't considered today a waste, because they'd come all this way and hoped to hear something from Hank. Why hadn't he already contacted them? But more than that, she'd known Austin had needed this time with his brother. Tomorrow she had to get serious in her search for Jamie. Willow shifted on the comfortable mattress. Heath had spared no expense for his customers who wanted to experience nature. Nothing better than getting a good night's sleep with a top-of-the-line mattress while roughing it. She could almost smile at that. She was a nature girl, all right. Enjoyed viewing nature from the safety of a panoramic cabin window. Hiking a trail now and again wasn't too bad, but not too far or for too long. Her mind refusing to rest, she reached for her cell and pulled up the image of the abductor Dana had sent her a few minutes ago. The forensic artist had taken the grainy image from the hospital security camera and aged the abductor, but she'd taken great liberties since that was a difficult task, and she had no other photographs to go by. In the meantime, she continued to work on an image of Jamie, though Willow doubted the forensic artist would come up with an image that looked much different from Caitlin. But one never knew, so that's why they continued with their efforts. Willow feared that she would fail to resolve JT's last case. He'd solved almost every mystery, every question he'd ever taken on. How utterly surreal that he had died in the middle of this impossible task, leaving it to Willow. If only for that reason alone, she could not fail. She let her phone screen go dark and set it on the side table next to the weapon Heath had loaned her. That too was surreal. He'd only given it to her as a precaution. Far from Seattle, she should be safe in Wyoming, especially here on the hard-to-reach guest ranch that hosted only a few families and friends. Austin was in the nearby cabin, as close as he'd ever stayed to her physically and emotionally. He was getting closer. He'd shared more of himself with her on this trip than he'd ever shared before, and they weren't even romantically involved. What was that about? She couldn't help but think it had everything to do with him coming back to Wyoming and facing what he had left behind. She also had to consider the very real possibility that JT had,
in fact, been thinking of Austin's struggles when he'd called him for assistance. She knew her grandfather. That would be just like him. Her heart smiled at thoughts of JT. Then she turned her thoughts to Caitlin and Jamie.
Lord, please let us find the truth for Caitlin. Please let her stay around long enough. Listen to her heart's cry. I know you will. You're good at that.
For the first time in days, Willow relaxed. Her mind stopped churning, and sleep finally took hold.
Shadows shifted in the darkness. The silhouette of a man approached. A knife glistened.
Willow's eyes opened. Her heart pounded from the dream and her frantic breaths filled her ears. She lay perfectly still, quieting her breaths enough to listen. It was only a dream. Her heart rate slowing to almost normal, she soundlessly sat up in the bed, wishing she'd stocked the fridge with at least a few groceries, a jug of milk, something. The cabin was much too quiet. The temperatures dropped at night too much this time of year for singing frogs and insects. A cool breeze brought a woodsy scent and raised goosebumps on her arms. She crept over to the open bedroom door. Across the room, she spotted the cause. The window was open. The curtains billowed.
Fear strangled her,
momentarily prevented her mind, her limbs from reacting. Her pulse spiked. Was someone in the cabin with her? She couldn't afford to stand there and do nothing. Something moved in the shadows. Willow dove for the bed. Her arm outstretched, she reached toward the nightstand, grabbed the SIG, twisted, and aimed. A man's form filled the threshold. He was heading for her. She fired twice, and in the same instant, he disappeared.
Oh, great! What now?
Palms sweating, Willow gulped for air. Was it over? Had he left? Had she shot him? Her position on the bed was far too vulnerable. She slowly rose. He could still be in the cabin. Holding the weapon at the ready, she lifted her phone to call 911. But given how far out they were, she would do better to call Austin, if she could get a signal. A stupid signal! Finally, the call connected. With the phone to her ear, she slowly crept out into the living area. Keeping her back against the wall, she remained ready to shoot the next thing that moved.
Come on, Austin, answer your phone.
The door burst open. Willow fired. The figure lunged to the side. Whoa, whoa, whoa! It's me, Willow! It's me, Austin! Her limbs went weak with her pulsing heartbeat. She lowered the weapon. I could have killed you! Holding his own gun, he rushed to her. I heard the gunfire. What happened?
He grabbed her arm and pulled her against him.
Willow drew comfort from his warm, strong body, from his presence. Heart still racing, she grasped for the words.
Someone was here.
He was in the cabin. He must have come through the window. I found it open. She fought the need to cover her face and sob. I don't know. Austin stared down at her. We'll figure it out later. Did you call 911?
I was going to, but I called you. You didn't answer. I tried to call and protect myself at the same time. I could barely get a signal.
It's okay. You're going to be okay. I didn't answer because I was running to get here.
I know.
She leaned against his chest, hoping she wouldn't collapse.
The door wasn't locked.
He must have left that way.
Austin drew her closer to him, rubbing her arms and back. I want you to call 911 now.
He took a step away. She pulled him back. Don't leave me.
Okay. Okay. I just want to check the cabin, that's all. I need to make sure we're alone. Then I'll check the perimeter. Chances are he's gone.
Austin peered at her, but she couldn't see much in the shadows.
Are you good?
Yeah. Let's turn some lights on and I'll be better.
I'd agree with you, but we don't want him able to see into the windows. He could take a shot at you then. If hurting you had been his intention. Tell you what. I'll make sure the windows are closed and the blinds and curtains shut. And then we'll turn on the lights.
Fine, but I'm coming with you.
Stay behind me then.
I still have my gun.
The way your hand is trembling, not to mention your aim, I'm not sure that will help us.
Thanks a lot.
You want honesty, don't you?
Sure. Lead the way.
Austin held his weapon and cleared the cabin, finding only a couple of windows with curtains open to let dawn filter in. After closing all the curtains, he flipped on the lights, which chased away the shadows. Willow positioned herself to get a signal and called 911. She spoke to dispatch, relaying the information. While she spoke, Austin examined the open window where the intruder entered, but didn't touch anything. Before she ended the call, light filtered through the blinds on the front windows of the cabin. Headlights. He tensed.
Get back from the window.
Why?
What do you think is going to happen?
No point in taking chances, Willow. She moved to stand at the far wall. Austin continued to peer out the window. Then his tense shoulders relaxed. He opened the mini blinds so she could see.
Heath's form headed for the cabin. He knocked, then cracked the door.
What's going on in here? I heard gunshots coming from this direction. Everyone okay?
No, we're not okay.
Austin had kept his weapon ready to use but lowered it.
Come on in.
Heath entered.
Is someone hurt?
No, Austin said.
But someone broke into the cabin through this window. Looks like it wasn't locked.
Nobody locks up around here, so maybe it was an oversight the intruder was counting on?
Willow choked on unshed tears.
I was sleeping. A dream woke me, but now I think I must have heard a noise in my sleep. It was weird. I realized the window was open and then saw something move, so I ran back to the bed and grabbed the SIG you loaned me. I think it might have saved my life tonight. I shot at him. He fled the cabin.
She shuddered, unable to control her trembling limbs.
Here, hold this.
Austin handed his weapon to Heath. Stand guard until the law gets here. He gently removed the Sig Sauer from Willow's trembling grip.
Good idea.
Then he wrapped his arms around her and cuddled her close. He said nothing at all, seeming to understand that she needed to be held. She pressed her forehead against his sturdy chest, hoping to soak up his courage and strength. Sure, she knew how to use a weapon and to protect herself, to a degree. Facing a real-life attack stripped her confidence and laid her bare. Too many close calls, she wanted to dissolve into the carpet.
Why does this keep happening? I thought I was safe here, at least for one night.
He rubbed her back, his hand trembling. This had upset him as much as it had her. She moved back from him to give herself room to breathe.
What am I going to do?
Heath paced the room.
First, you're moving in with me tonight. Both of you. I'm sorry this happened while you were here. And then you're going to tell me what the heck is going on. Maybe I can offer some assistance.
Rubbing her arms, Willow composed herself.
I'm good with that, thanks.
I'm just going to gather my things while we wait on the sheriff. They'd cleared the house. The man was gone. Willow moved toward the bedroom to grab her duffel and pack away her things. She glanced at the closet. He wouldn't be hiding in the closet.
I'm okay. I'm going to be fine.
She placed one foot in front of the other, putting distance between her and Austin and his sturdy brother. Warmth permeated her back. She glanced over her shoulder. Austin followed her. Willow allowed herself a tenuous smile. Of course he would stay close and protect her. She'd never thought she'd need that, though she had a feeling it was equal parts Austin the man and Austin the protector that she needed. She flipped on the lamp on the nightstand. A slip of paper rested on the stand. Austin.
What is it?
He stood on the other side of the bed, hands on his hips. Willow lifted the paper, opened it, and gasped.
It's a note.
A warning. Heart pounding, she read it out loud. Stop the search. It's a dead end. The man at my bed with a knife. It wasn't a dream.
Chapter 30. Muscles tensing, Austin fisted his hands. The man had gotten close enough to her to leave a note. A threatening note, no less. He could have killed her if he'd wanted to. He'd tried in Seattle. Why didn't he kill her here? Austin's throat tightened. He tugged latex gloves and a small plastic bag from his jeans pocket and then secured the note in the bag. Willow's hazel eyes grew big. He shrugged.
I like to be prepared, I guess. Besides, this is the first big break we've had, an actual piece of evidence.
They weren't hired to find a killer, or even the abductor, but all the better if this brought them closer to the truth about Jamie Mason. Willow pressed her hand to her throat. He knew exactly what she was thinking. Come here. He held her again, getting much too comfortable with the action. Austin hadn't told her that she'd grazed him with a bullet. It had ripped through his shirt and scratched his arm. Nothing major. No need to upset her. But that concerned him. He had thought she'd be a much better shot. She should have killed him tonight. He was glad she'd missed. Maybe it had more to do with divine intervention. It wasn't his time to go. His knees still shook at the close call. Both his and hers. He never should have left her alone, even in a cabin next to his. His tense neck and shoulders ached. Headlights shined bright in the distance, moving up and down as the vehicles bumped along the rutted drive to the cabins. Why don't you sit? I'll get you a drink of water. Looks like the law has finally arrived. Willow eased into a chair without a word. She drifted into a dazed state. Not good. Heath moved to the door.
I'll go out and meet them. I suspect Sheriff Haynes will have come himself. We're friends, so I'll let him know what's happened.
Sounds good. Austin headed to the kitchen to get water for both himself and Willow. Their search for a person abducted 2 decades ago had grown complicated. Now Willow's life was in danger because they were looking for answers. Getting help from the local law in finding whoever had broken into her cabin could help them in their search. Heath entered, along with the sheriff and one of his deputies. 2 other deputies had been dispersed to search the grounds to see if the man remained. Austin hoped they wouldn't trample any additional evidence. Getting in and out of here wasn't easy.
Sheriff Haynes propped his hands on his hips, his gun resting in the holster on his belt. A stocky man in his early 60s. He had thick reddish hair layered with gray that looked more yellow than red. "How's Tanner doing?" Heath asked. The sheriff's expression turned somber. "That grandson of mine is a real fighter. He's hanging in there." "Thanks for asking, Heath."
"You're welcome.
I'll keep him in my prayers. I'm going to head outside and look around." Heath exited the cabin. After introducing himself, Sheriff Haynes gestured to the deputy beside him.
"And this is Deputy Taggart. Now tell me, what's going on here?"
He eyed Austin, disapproval etched into his features. Austin had drawn the sheriff's attention 4 years ago when his father had his accident. He wasn't surprised when the sheriff turned away without acknowledging him. Sheriff Haynes questioned Willow for more details about the break-in, and she told him about the attacks in Seattle. Then Austin shared his side of the story.
"And you think this guy followed you here from Seattle?"
Sheriff Haynes lifted a thick yellow brow. Willow's features paled.
"I hope not. But who else could it be, especially considering the note the guy left?"
"We'll move up to the house with Heath tonight, Sheriff. Heath and I can watch out for her better there."
"I'll take the note with me," the sheriff said. "We'll process for fingerprints and do that for the cabin, too. Check for footprints. Considering you're the first person to stay here, like you said, we could get lucky. Then why don't you come in to see me tomorrow and show me what you have so far on the missing girl? If you have pictures or names, maybe I can help. Maybe not. It's worth a try."
"I have one right now. I can show it to you."
Willow swiped her phone and showed it to the sheriff.
"It's the abductor."
He examined the image, scrunching up his face.
"It might not be a very good rendering, since it was an age progression done on a grainy photograph," she said.
The sheriff crinkled his forehead.
"Email it to me. I'll do what I can to get the word out."
That was certainly more than Austin would have expected. The man had his hands full with law enforcement duties and search and rescues, which could be particularly challenging in these parts. Austin suspected he was only being hands-on because of his relationship with Heath. Willow's face brightened.
"Thank you, Sheriff. I appreciate your help."
When the sheriff and deputy moved outside to search the premises, Heath returned to help Austin and Willow gather and load their things into the truck. He drove them the short distance to the main house at the ranch, his house, and ushered them inside.
"As you can see, I've added on in the renovations. There are 4 rooms upstairs, 2 downstairs. I sleep downstairs. Evelyn stays in a room downstairs, too."
He sent Willow a wry grin.
"I wasn't expecting guests today."
"I'm sure the rooms are fine," Willow said.
"Thank you, Heath.
I just wish you would have stayed here to begin with. Then maybe this wouldn't have happened."
Heath helped them lug their bags up the stairs and showed them their rooms.
"You two get a good night's sleep. I'll watch the house, me and the dogs."
"Thanks, bro." Austin hoped Heath understood the depth of his gratitude. By the look in his eyes before he headed downstairs, he seemed to. Willow had already disappeared into the bedroom and closed the door. He'd wanted to talk to her more, to make sure she was all right. When the door opened and she stepped out into the hallway, that part of him that couldn't seem to let go of her could have grabbed her up and held her forever. He reined in those crazy, stupid thoughts as she drew near.
Her glistening eyes zeroed in on his shoulder. Soft lines formed around her mouth and eyes.
I'm so sorry that I almost shot you.
Bottom lip quivering, she lifted her hand and touched his shoulder. He resisted wincing for her sake and savored the concern pouring from her. She fingered the torn fabric.
Is this from the bullet? It grazed you?
Her shoulders slumped. He gently gripped her arms.
It's okay. It's over. I'm alive. Never thought I'd be glad you have terrible aim.
He teased, but his attempt at humor fell flat.
Now, go get some sleep. No one is going to get by Heath and Timber, old dog that he is. Timber, that is.
Unfortunately, someone almost got by Austin tonight.
I'm worried about Jamie.
Are we putting her life in danger because we're trying to find her? We don't know where she is, so we can't even protect her.
I don't have an answer.
He wondered what she would think if he told her the reason he'd resigned from the FBI. If he shared that on his last assignment, he'd been working to find an abducted child. Was he even up to the task of protecting Willow? She left him and went back to her room. He returned to his own room, sat at the chair next to the window, and stared into the night. There was so much she didn't know about him, so much he wanted to finally share. But it was pointless now, because they had no future together. Chapter 31. Friday, 5:27 a.m., Bridger Teton National Forest. Something woke Charlie in the middle of the night. From her room, she heard Mama's frightened voice speaking in low tones. She slipped out of bed and crept down the hallway to listen.
No, please don't do this. I'm sorry. I made a mistake. I shouldn't have asked for more.
A man, wearing a mask, fired his weapon point blank at Mama. She dropped to the ground. Before the shock of that moment engulfed Charlie, the man pointed his weapon at her and spoke in a gruff, unnatural tone to disguise his voice.
I'm going to kill you, too.
She turned and fled down the hallway. A bullet hit the wall, barely missing her. She ran into her bedroom and slammed the door behind her, knowing it would merely slow him, not stop him. She climbed through her window and slipped out into the night. She sprinted through the meadow in the back of their 2-acre lot and kept running. Mama's screams echoed in her ears. Her body dropping to the floor played through her mind. Adrenaline propelled Charlie into the Bridger Teton National Forest, which she knew like the back of her hand. From a distance, behind her, the man shouted that he would find and kill her. She appreciated the warning. She would never let that happen. Charlie shot up in bed, a cold sweat drenching her body. The dreams came less frequently now. Instead, the fear and anguish and deep aching loss showed up in panic attacks.
I shouldn't have asked for more.
More what? More money? More time? The Hoback County Sheriff's Department investigator, Randall Kuntz, had wanted to accuse Charlie of killing her own mother. He claimed there was no evidence anyone else had been in the house except Charlie. She thought maybe he was trying to protect Clyde. Sheriff Everett, to his credit, had put a quick end to the line of thinking that put Charlie as the suspect. But she still couldn't count on him to protect her from Clyde, even if she got a restraining order. Charlie would remain hidden from the man who threatened to kill her, while she tried to figure out what her mother's words had meant when she said she shouldn't have asked for more. Had Mama known the man? It seemed like she'd known who'd come for her and why. It had to have been Clyde. Who else? Part of her feared that Sheriff Everett might bend an ear to Kuntz's accusation.